Well, I'd like just like to start with, do you want to tell me something about your parents?
Well, my parents, they one of them come from Holland, and my grandfather did, but not my father. My father was born in Baltimore. And my mother was born here, in this house.
What was her name?
Her name was Emerald. That's how I got my first name. Was my mother's name was Emerald, and they named me Emerald. That's the only name we got. I didn't get no middle name. So, father, he was in the can business for years. I guess from about 1980, maybe a little older than that. And I was around the can house ever since I was a little kid. I remember a lot of things that the can house had done down there. We used to can tomatoes all the time, and we always got our people out of Baltimore for working the can house. We'd get about 40 peelers out there from Baltimore. And years back, a lot of times we got them right off the boat. It's Polish people. And they couldn't speak no English, and we had to have an interpreter all the time to talk to them. But towards the west, they got so most of them could talk English and Polish both. After the next generation come in there, we got a different generation in there that could talk English. But at first there was them Polish people. We'd come over here and we got them right off the boat. And we'd rent a car in Baltimore, and they'd send it out there and back it in on a sidetrack. And they'd haul them up to the can house. The can house was up on Hanson Road up here. There the old can house was in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we canned a lot of the mirrors. We made cans there at one time.
Yeah.
When the first years back, you made cans there, and it was all made with a foot press. You know, there wasn't no power them days. And they'd have big press run, and they just kept it running with the foot. They'd get the machine to run, you know, and the foot would keep it revolving, and they cut the cans out and solder them up the sides, put the bottoms on them, tops on them, all cut out with the foot power. Mm. And then afterwards, the cans at first had caps on them. It wasn't open top cans. And they had to cut the top out and place for the cap, and then cut the cap out. Mm-hmm. And then when we packed tomatoes there, we packed tomatoes there for years with the machine. And they come down and go through this packing machine, and then they go out. And then they had to have somebody there putting the caps on and the solder. And the men would hit the solder, and then it had a little tip hole in the cap. That had to be tipped up. Well, that went on for years, and then we got the cap machine with the solder the cap, hole cans up with the machine, a dozen cans at a time. We've done that for years, and finally got into the crimp machine. The first crimp machine we had, we always canned number three cans at that time. And the first machine we had, it belonged to the can company. You run them. And it was running 49 cans a minute. And then it went on for years, and then we got another machine in there. And we started canning out a number two can. And it would run 70 cans a minute. And it was just a stream of them coming through all the time, and they just picked them on out and put the caps on, crimp them right up, and then they went from there into the process kettle. And give them 45 minutes in the process kettle. And then they went out there and back into the warehouse, and after they cooled down, and then the guy had a label all of them, all them cans had to be labeled. And they build them all by hand. That was all done by hand. And we had a guy there who built from the whole year through. He could build 150 cases a day. It was big wages them days. You got to send a case. For label. Well, most all the labor in a can house was nothing that went over 10 cents an hour. There was no strikes either. Nobody struck. Everybody was satisfied. And then people would come out and they'd work in a can house. Oh, if you opened a can house at 5 o'clock in the morning, they was there. And they'd work till midnight. Work right straight through. They peeled the measures by the bucket. You used to pay about 4 cents a bucket. Last year of a can, we paid 10 cents a bucket. But the first day, was paying about 4 cents a bucket for peeling. And some of the women could peel 100 buckets a day. Mm-hmm. They just have a steady stream of tomatoes.
What was the label, Bell, that you put on them?
Queen brand. And towards the last, we got the can Queen brand and a Robinson brand. And the Queen brand in Pittsburgh would bring 5 cents more a dozen than the Robinson brand would. And then New York, the Robinson brand would bring 5 cents more than the Queen brand in New York. So one time, it was a preacher down there, and he was over in Scotland. And he sent one of the bay bills back. They was up. They went all over the country when shipping clear into Scotland. Canned tomatoes there for a year. One year we put up 23,000 cases of almost 3 cans. That's about tomatoes. Well, and then the farm up there, we used to plant about 60, 70 acres of tomatoes up home there.
Now, where was this located? Where was it?
Right next to farm, you're up above you, up on the hill. You can see the house, the big house up on the hill there. There's where I was born up there. That's the big house up there. It's 13 rooms in there. That house and 2 halls in there. 2 halls and a bathroom. A big house up there. There's 7 of us. Well, there's 7 of us, my mother, my father, and 2 hard men. Most of the time it was a hard girl there. So the house was about full. And we had it pretty good. We pumped the water with a windmill. Had a windmill up there and pumped the water. And we had hot and cold water in the house. Had a bathtub when I was a kid. We didn't have no toilet in the house, but we had a bathtub and a wash bowl. And we had hot and cold water. We had a hot water tank set right on the side of the kitchen range. And that kitchen range, the water front was in the front of the, right in the far box. And it heated the water in that tank. And the windmill pumped the water up to the third story. It was about a 300-gallon tank up in the third story. And it pumped the water up there. And then the water come down, and when the tank got full, it would run over and run down into a cistern house. And then it was siphoned there, from there, down to the barn. And we had water all through the house, and we had the hot and cold water printer all the time, all summer long, because them days you cooked on the wood range all year round. You didn't have no electric range or nothing like that. Cooked on electric range. One time they run 3 can houses. They had one up on where Route 7 is now, and they run one down in Gunpowder Neck, down way down the lower part of Gunpowder Neck. They used to load them canned goods down there. Sometimes they'd ship them away on a boat down there, right out of Bush River. Load them on a boat right down there to Bush River and ship them out. My grandfather, he built a boat down here at the Wolford's place down where Willard Beach is. I don't know whether you know where it is down there now. But going way down to Willard Beach, he built a 3-master ship down there that drawed 15 foot of water. And he cut it right out of that woods. And it hauled out of Mexico for a good many years. They had a full crew on it. And now down there where he put that ship over, you can walk across there with shoes. They drawed 15 foot of water when they put that boat over there. You wouldn't believe that would fill in that place. That all soil comes from Pennsylvania and on down. And I imagine inside about 25 years, the other end of Bush River, you'll be able to walk across there. Here about 2 years ago, down in Bush River, we went down there and there wasn't a drop of water in Bush River. The wind had blew every bit of it out and was solid mud, all the way down to the railroad bridge. Just solid mud in there. And then they farmed it out, and I've been on the farm all my life. I know from there all about it with having on the farm. I remember when people used to run rows out for corn and drop it by hand, covered up with a horse with a corn cover. Now they plant the corn here with a tractor, spray it, and I don't touch it no more. Used to cultivate it 3 or 4 times, don't cultivate it no more. Just not a weed comes up in it. We used to have thinned a lot of corn when I was a kid. When I was a kid, you used to have to thin corn. You used to plant it by hand. The first I ever planted was planted with a hand planter. You just went along and hit the rows and planted by hand. And then it had to be thinned. If we got too many in the hill, you had to pull some of them out. And then we got the horse planter. That planted 2 rows at a time for the horse. And dropped it with a chain. That held it. The chain would drop it on every 3 foot. That's the way you planted the corn towards the west when I was a kid. Had the first corn planter. I planted corn when I couldn't even reach the pedal. We had an old man working there and he couldn't run the corn planter. And probably put me on it. A pair of horses to corn planter. I planted corn when I wasn't hard, what, 10 years old, I guess. Worked a pair of horses all the time. Cut wheat when I was a kid, I couldn't even reach a bundle carrier. We've been farming for years and years. And I was lived up home there when I first got married and lived up there until I come down here in 1916. I've been here ever since. That's a very good wall.
Yes, it is. Well, let's see. Have some things. What about something about your school when you were going to school? Do you remember?
Well, when I went to school, we used to, in wintertime, when it got snowdrift, we had horses there, and we used to drive down and put them in the stable down there and then go to school. But the ones that didn't have no horses or nothing, well, they just had to walk to school.
Now, where was this
school? At Edgewood.
Now, where was that located?
Right in Edgewood, right down where, well, putting at the end of this road, just right below that, right just a little bit below that was it. A little yellow schoolhouse sat there. We used to run one-room school. And the teachers them days, I don't know what these teachers would do now, but them teachers them days, if she didn't have over 40 kids, she didn't have no help. And she kept the school, and she seen the fire was burning, and she kept the school swept. And I heard she got $300 a year. And if she didn't have 40 kids, well, she didn't get no help. And if she got over 40, then they'd have an assistant that took over the first, second, and third grade. And she taught the rest. And she had the lower first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. And she got all them lessons during the day. And she didn't miss nothing either. And she didn't seem to be rushing herself either. Now the teachers teach one damn little thing and they can't get away. They growl about that. And they don't have nothing to do in the school. They got the, she had all her books to keep and everything. Mm. She come down from Furman every morning when I went to school. With two sisters taught there. One taught for a while, and then the other one taught there for a while.
What was their name?
McDonald. Maggie McDonald and Nellie McDonald was taught there. They taught there for years. Mm. Of course, it didn't cost much to come from Furman. You could get on a train here at Magnolia, a round trip to Baltimore was 75 cents, and a round trip from Edgewood was 85 cents.
Mm.
And it only cost about a nickel to come from Furman down to Edgewood. But still, that was a lot of money in them days, and they just want to get that little bit of money. Well, pretty much all the people, all the schools were generally in the, like in the villages, like Edgewood, Magnolia, Van Burmer was school. There was one in Everton. There was one up on the pike here, up here, Jout. And anybody was in between there, no matter how far there was away, they had to walk to school. They didn't get no ride to school. And if the snow got too deep, well, they just didn't go until snow cleared away, until they could get to school again. That's the way it worked them days.
Mm.
Nobody seen that you get there.
Mm-hmm.
But we always be able to drive to school. But up home there, I guess we had to go better than most people had it. And I remember one time, it was about 1908. My father had the carbide lights put in the house. And they lived just about as good as electric. Pretty much as good as electric. We had them in every room. And a couple of rooms had chandeliers and they had three or four lights in them. It worked like almost like a city gas light. They had flints on them. And when you went to light the lights, you just turned that flint and turned the gas on. It was a big tank. It went down the basement. Held about 50 gallons of water. And then you, up in the top, was a 50-pound can of carbide.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a floating there. And when the gas went down, it would trip a couple of pieces of carbide, and a couple of pieces of carbide would fall down in there. And then the gas would form again, and the float would come up and shut the carbide off. And that's the way it worked. It just worked automatic. It didn't. And 50 pounds of carbide used to last us about 3 months.
Hmm.
But it was a pretty good job them days. You had to put that water in them tanks. And then you could take that there carbide after, when you drained the tank out, you could use it for whitewash. You would just whitewash your building just the same as you would with mine.
Hmm.
You know, I used that until electric come in. I got electric in here in 1929. I had electric put in here. We had to pay for it to bring it up here and you get it in here. We've had electric in here ever since. So ever since that, we've had refrigerators and that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
And you take the stores in the villages in them days. There was no package goods. They had bins in there all along behind the counter. And coffee and beans or rice or whatever it was, and they just scoop it out and put it in a bag and weigh it up. And there was no packaged goods. There was no bread. They didn't sell no bread. Everybody picked their own bread. Then Bohemians, when they used to bake, we had across the road from where the shanty was, we had a oven built out there. It was about 4 foot square and was bricked up, and the floor was bricked. And it was bricked all over top, and then it had a smokestack at it, and then had a dirt pile all over top of that shit. It was piled over. And they put wood in there and get them brick hot and pull out the prettiest bread you ever seen. And three or four would bake at a time, see if it was 4 foot square, a whole lot of bread. And they'd bring loaves of bread out of there like that. They baked all their own bread. Of course, there wasn't no place you could buy bread. There was no bakers around. Mm-hmm. I don't know what people would do now if they had to do that. Mm. But they'd bake their own bread and everything. And you cooked outside. And the stoves they had out there, they'd brick it up on both sides about that high. And they had a steel plate went over top of it. And two or three families would cook on there at one time. They just put their pots on top of that iron plate, and that's the way they cooked. They cooked all outside, whether it was raining or no matter what it was doing, they cooked outside all the time. Hmm. And they stayed in the shanty down there. Every year, right before, when the people come out, we take a whole load of straw down there. And they just bored a place off by your bed, filled up with straw, and then they had a sheets and stuff they put on top of it. And when you run down the load of straw, them Bohemians run out there and they grab them arms full of straw, you know, they take it in and put them in the bed and build the beds up about that high with straw. And Saturday night, and then they'd have a dance out in front of the shanty, right on the ground, and have a old guy playing the accordion, playing all that old Polish music. You could hear it all over the trip to the house when they had them dances down there. They'd have a big time. Everybody was happy. Nobody was complaining. Nowadays, they ain't satisfied now. The lower money they get, the more money they get, the less they're satisfied.
Now, the shanties were where the Bohemians lived that worked
where
on
the stage. You know, they asked for about 6 weeks. They'd be asked for about 6-7 weeks.
For the canning.
For the canning.
And where was it located? Where was the shanty?
Well, the shanty was, well, it was right across here. It wasn't far from the can house. It was about a little further from here down to the road from the can house, the shanty was. And it was had six big rooms in it. And sometimes two families, if it was a big room, two families would go in one room and they just put a bed sheet up and hang it across and divide up. Mm-hmm. They all seemed to be happy, nobody complained. Mm-hmm. Nowadays they ain't satisfied enough. Mm-hmm. No matter what they get, they still ain't satisfied.
Do you remember much about the village of Edgewood? What was in there?
Well, it was nothing but a store in there and a railroad station. And the post office was always in the station. And at one time there was a coach running from Edgewood, but that was before my time. But the old coach stable and the old hotel was still there a couple of years ago yet. The old hotel was, but they tore this old coach stable down. We used to store canned goods in there afterwards. But it was the old stable was there, coach stable, and they used to run coaches out of there from down to the railroad and went on to Blair. And the old coach stable was there. We used to put canned goods in there after years back, but I never seen, there was no coaches there when I was a kid. That was before my time. But the old hotel and the coach table was still there. And all the post offices was in the station. One at Magnolia and one at Edgewood. And down at Edgewood, they run a mail out of there in the morning. And one come from Blair in the morning. And they stopped at Emerton, Vanbrugh, and Edgewood. And each one of the carriers left the mail, one coming down, one going up. But out of Magnolia, they only run one out of there. They run from Magnolia to Benson, up on Route 1. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if the snow got too deep and they couldn't drive, lots of times they carried the mail on horseback. Well, they had one mail bag. Mm-hmm. And then there was a little post office at Clayton, called Clayton Post Office. That was up above 7 there. And then it was the one at Wilna, and then at Benson. But there was only one rat on there. But down at Edgewood, they had one going each way in the morning.
Mm.
That's how they got the mail out. Mm. And you didn't have nobody driving your mail here at the house. You went to the post office and got your mail. Of course, you didn't get so much mail either. Did you? Mm. Mm. We came down down the neck. It didn't came down there too many years. They had trouble down there. They got malaria. Mm. And people would come out from Baltimore. And I guess there was so many mosquitoes down in the neck here that they'd get malaria and get sick. You know, we quit canning down there. We didn't can there anymore.
Mm.
But that was all. Everything was done by horsepower then day. And then the roads here, nobody cleaned the roads up. There was no cleaning the roads up, and when they drifted shut, they drifted shut.
Mm-hmm.
And what you done them days was you come down, and when you come down to the end of the field, and you could get in the field, you tore the fence down and went in the field and come out down the other end. And then if you get out there, you get up in another field, and you go drive the field. Of course, a horse would go most any place. But I was a little kid. I remember the biggest snowstorm that I ever seen was I was about 7 years old, I guess. In 98. I remember the home there, them kitchen windows was higher than that. And with snow drift out there, it was up above them windows. And the father said it was 5 foot of snow in the woods. I didn't see it in the woods, but he said it was 5 foot of snow in the woods. And some of them drifts was 15 foot. And you couldn't even get out horseback. That was the biggest snow. I don't think you ever had another storm snow like that since that. But I just remember a little kid looking out the window. I could see that snow was higher in the windows.
What about getting a telephone in your home?
Well, we had a line in here. My sister lived down here. She just got married. And we had a private line put in. It was one little telephone up on a lodge around. And it went from here up home there. And from there, it went down to Norris's down there. And Walter Lance's and over the old Lance place. Was five phones, and they run by bluestone and water. That's what made you current. You had a jar sitting on the floor of that bluestone and water, and that's what you got the current, and you could ring it. And you could talk over just the same as you would a TNP phone. It worked all right. And then they got a phone. Lance has got a first TNP telephone over there. And of course, the brokers were in blaring, and sometimes the father, he'd want to talk to them. And they'd just take the receiver off of this line and put it on the mouthpiece of the other one. And he could talk right through the blare over that, just that old private line. And we could, sometimes in wintertime here, you could get the sleigh out the 1st of December. And not use anything else until about March. You could stay all winter, because it didn't scrape the roads or nothing. There was always snow on the roads. And you could stay there in March. People use sleighs for all winter.
Mm.
And then you used to cut wood. They used to have a sweet power, what they call a sweet power. I don't know whether you heard of them or not, but it was a sort of big frame like that, and then it would come up and had a bunch of big cogs in there. And this thing had a pole on it, about as far as from here to the door long, and it was a shaft that run from the center of that thing out past the end of this pole. And the horse went around and around and around, just went around and run its pole, pulley, and that pulley run whatever you wanted to run with it, like you could saw wood with it, or they drilled a well up home with the sweet power, with just one horse hooked to it, 175 feet, and it drilled through 20 foot of rock with that horse just going around and running this here pulley over there was running the drill, and that's how the drill was in days. Drilled it with a sweep power. Drilled a 6-inch hole and down 175 feet. And then we had trouble. The sand down the bottom of the well would get in the buckets and eat the buckets up. And then every time we'd done that, you'd have to take all them rods out and put new weather on there. And then we decided to move the windmill down the field with the spring down there. And we opened the well up down there for where the spring was, and we hooked it up down there and forced water from down there up to the house. That was as far away as from here over to that house over there. And we'd drive a crew up in the third story of that windmill down there. Then we had a gasoline engine down there, but that got to be a nuisance. You had to go down there and start it. But that windmill, it run on its own. And the one we had down there, if the wind got to blowing too hard, it would swing around and shut itself off. And the paddle and the wheel would go around straight together like that. And then as soon as the wind shacked up a little bit, that paddle would come back and throw that wheel back against the wind against it. And that's what started it.
What about your refrigeration?
We didn't have no refrigeration them days. We had the ice hats. We had an ice hat. I filled the one down, had one down here when I come down here, and I filled it for a couple of years. And then we got the electric in here, and that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't fill the ice hats anymore. But the last couple of years here, you never got an ice hat filled, because there wasn't enough ice to, wasn't hard enough to hold you to cut the ice. I remember when I was young, the pond up there, we cut 10 inches of ice on there. Winter time, sometimes, we saw the ice hat. All in all, the ice hat, I don't know whether you ever seen one or not, but the ice hat was about 10, 12 foot square, and it was about 12 foot deep. And then you filled it up with ice, and covered it over with straw. And you could keep most anything in there. And I remember when I was a kid, they used to kill a lamb up home once in a while, and we'd keep it down on that ice, and it would stay about half frozen. That's what kept it going. That's the only refrigeration it had, but most people didn't have no refrigeration at all. And most of them carried all the water from the spring. Some people carried as far as from here over to that house. And then and women would carry water that far and then wash on a washboard. Had to carry all that water for washing the wash tub. I don't know what they do now, they had to do that.
I wanted to ask you about clearing the land for farming. Can you tell me about that?
Do what?
Clearing the land
farming. They used to clear land, but we never cleaned no land for anybody else, but they had the land cleaned up home. They grub it with a mattock. They got $40 an acre for grubbing an acre of land. Take them all winter to grub an acre. And they got $40 an acre for it. And they cleaned up, I remember of home, I cleaned up them all, 20 acres there, I guess. Just young bushes, small bushes, but the stumps was in there. They had to take all the stumps out. And then they fired up with horses afterwards. And then they used a stump puller one time there towards grass. And that tore up the subsoil so bad, it seemed like nothing wouldn't grow on it. Pulled too much subsoil up on top. And it didn't work too good. But they grubbed it, with the acre. The whole man used to grub it. Grub ground all down around the ice pond there. That was all cleaned up when I was a kid. About 8 or 10 acres had it cleaned up in there. And that pond up there, it was about 200 feet long and about 100 feet wide. And in the wintertime, they were skating there all winter, and pretty near they skate there all winter. And people would walk from Joplin, Minot, Edgewood, walk up there and skate till 10, 11 o'clock at night and walk back again. They had a good time having a sport. And each have a car there, put a tank with a car in it. All the young people around the country went in there.
Do you remember anything about the barn building?
The barn building?
Uh-huh.
Well, they used to build barns. This barn here was built before I was born, about a year. It was built in 92. And I heard Father say it cost $800 to put that barn up. And that's all white pine lumber. The carpenters, the best of carpenters got $1.50 a day for 10 hours. They were the best carpenters. Now they're getting $18 an hour. And they ain't satisfied yet. Something's gonna bust some of these days. Coming to an end, it'll come to an end for a while. And they'll have the worst depression you ever heard tell of. That's what's coming. It's gotta come. The unions has ruined the country, yes. It's ruined the whole thing. But this union strikes and they get what they want. Well, now it says, well, they get another raise, we'll strike too, so that means strike. And anybody with common sense knows that when wages goes up, everything else has got to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way about it. And that's what causes if you're high price of stuff, it's natural, it's got to go up. It's going to go worse than this yet if you ain't doing what. They don't do something about it for long. The people worked on the railroad. All the people who lived in the village worked on the railroad. And they got a man who was on a crossing watchman. He worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and got $35 a month. And the ones worked on the tracks, they got $1 a day for 10 hours. Now the ones on the tracks are getting $5 and $6 an hour. What's that a day? Getting that much an hour. No wonder the railroads broke up.
Mm-hmm.
It showed you just what then. And as far as doing horsepower, when they built this arsenal down here, that whole arsenal was built with horses. There wasn't a tractor or a bulldozer or nothing like that in there nowhere. And all that leveling up down there was done with horses with scoops. And the father said when they put this B&O railroad too, that was all done with mules. And some of them cuts up there is deeper than his house. And it was all scooped out of there with horses. Yeah, the whole arsenal down there was all built with horses. All the hauling was done down there with horses. There wasn't a truck. There wasn't a tractor down there. We got our first tractor about 1920. That was the first tractor we ever had here. And it wasn't a whole lot. And then I got a fortune after one time. Bought a fortune. It would start when it was 10 below zero. But you got up there in the field in July when it was about 100 degrees, and you couldn't get that thing started setting it. And I swore then, if I ever bought anything Henry Ford ever made, I hope somebody kicked me off. But I never bought a thing Henry Ford made since. I cranked that thing till my eyeballs from the fell out.
Well, did you do any milking of cows?
Oh yeah, we had cat dairy here. Had dairy up home years ago in 1908. We had a dairy up home. And the way we kept milk through there for a while, we had the water come down to the barn, down to the milk house, and we run a pipe down to the bottom of the ice house and run a coil back and forth across the bottom of that ice house and back into the milk house. And that water would come out there, was ice cold, come out, and that's how we cooled the milk in up there at home. But down here, when it come down here, I used the spring house for a while. You just had in the spring, had a place in the spring house there where you could set the milk cans in. And then I got a milk box and bought ice in it. And then the first thing you know, I got another milk box. They cool milk cans, set milk cans in. And then after we got electric in here, and then we put in an electric box. And then finally wound up about 1930s, I guess, to put a milk tank in. And I put the electric in here in 1929, and we put that milk box in the 30s, I think. The milk tank, and you just dump the milk in the tank and it would cool it down to a certain temperature and then it would shut off, and if the milk got above that, well, it would kick on again and keep it cool all night. And then the trucks come in here and we pick it up, pump it out of the tanks into the truck, take it away. But we shipped milk in cans for years. Shipped milk. I ship milk for 12 cents a gallon. That's it. And paid 7.5 cents freight on a 5 gallon can. So you wouldn't know you wasn't. We'll be in Baltimore there, and they paid a nickel a quart. And if they didn't come out in the street and bring a bucket out in the street to get the milk, they didn't get none. They had what they call a churn in the back of the wagon. And if anybody wanted a quart of milk, well, they just turn the spigot on and draw them a quart of milk. And they had to bring their own containers out. And there wasn't any containers them days. And that's the way they do every milk in Baltimore. A wagon went around. And they had them horses trained so that the driver had a customer on this street here, and a customer was over on the other street over there. And that horse would go around there and stop at that other place without even driving. And all these roads here was all dirt roads. There wasn't any macadam roads at all around. And then from Little Falls on into Baltimore one day, that was a cobblestone road where number 7 is now. That was all cobblestone from there on into Baltimore. And they used to drive cattle in there. And as late as 1916, Nephi had a bunch of steers down here, and he had been out west, and he got to be thought he was a cowboy, you know. So they drove them steers from down here into the stockyard, and they went right through Baltimore. You drive right through Baltimore. I know one time my father bought some cows down in the stockyard, him and his cousin, and we went down to Carrington and met them down there, and they drove them out through Baltimore and out there on Apple County, and we met them down and drove them the rest of the way home. But as late as 1916, Snappy sent a bunch of steers down through Baltimore, right down through the street. The stockyards was way out the other side of Montgomery Ward. And they drove them right straight through Baltimore. Of course, there wasn't no cars on the road. Yeah, I remember they drove cattle on the roads in days, and there wasn't no truck to call them.
I have a note to ask you about the hailstorm.
I had a hailstorm come through here one time, and I had a field of tomatoes out here, and I just started to pick them, and oh, it was a beautiful crop of tomatoes. Here. and never touched another field around here. And I was down the can house, and the hail coming out of the can house and was going, went clear down the other end of the warehouse, that big around. And I had a guy driving the hauling tomatoes here, and he come up a road there, and he got up here at Heinz Lane, and that hail got to hitting him, and he had his wrists all beat up. The horses backed him around and upset the boxes. And it never touched another tomato field around here. It's funny how that stuff goes sometimes.
What about the floods on Winter's Run?
We hauled milk up to Vanbrugh, and one morning there, and I had a horse to a milk wagon. Milk wagon was about that high the body was. And when I got up there this side of Winter's Run, the water was coming down there, and there was cakes of ice coming down there. And when I went through there, I got out in the center of it, and water was coming in the wagon. And you could feel the wagon when I came across the road. And I got up there and got the milk off. And I thought, well, I ain't going back that way. I'll go back around the Clayton and come down that way. And I got up on the old Philadelphia Road and got down there, and it was just as bad up at the run where it come across 7 up there as it was down there at the railroad. So I got home all right, but that used to flood there all the way.
Do you remember much about butchering time?
Butchering? Yeah, I killed the hogs. Yeah. Butchering them. And every time I started the farm, I used to kill my own hogs and butcher them. Once I killed a couple of cows. I killed one from a cousin one time, and I killed one from myself one time, and that's the only two bees that were killed. I used to kill a hog. You used to keep enough hogs for them to keep us in. We used to smoke when we got home all the time. We had a building up there, I guess it was about 10 foot one way and about 12 foot the other. And it was stone wall up to the top. It was all plastered up top. And it had bars across the top. And they'd take it to me after you butchered it, and they'd put it down in bronze. And after it got in bronze for so long, they'd take it out. And then hang it up on them bars and smoke it. And that meat would keep just as good till fall as it. That's how you used to smoke the meat. You just fill the bar in there and smoke that meat. It could put the wood up high enough so the flames, the heat wouldn't, you know, melt the grease or nothing, but it would just smoke it. And we could have smoked meat burning all year round that way. We used to buy some fresh meat up home, and the butcher come around. He used to come around once a week. Had a butcher wagon and 2 horses hooked to it. And he used to bring beef around. We used to get beef from him. And I worked with him. We always raised our own foot. But we didn't kill no bees in days. You couldn't hardly handle beef in days. Unless you smoked it, and we never went smoking meat. We used to smoke all the pork. Cows, I sold a mini cow, $45. Pretty good cow. Now they're $600, $700, $800 a cow.
Did you have to what did you do about, did you have to get them shots and get a veterinarian, or did you do most of it yourself, like when you got sick or something?
Well, we never had one time you're way back in 1920. They started this year TB testing. Well, they tested the herd here and turned every one of them went down. Everybody was going down. They're shipping them in, they shipping them out of here and shipping them in car loadouts away from there. And then after they found out what the hell he was doing, the amount of stuff that they put in one cow then, they put in a whole herd. They put so much stuff in there that it made the cow react, see? They was, and you got little heifers and everything, young stuff, everything went down. They, you know, every one of them had DB and said, we shipped them all away from here one time. I had to buy all new cows. Mm-hmm. It, they didn't have no TB. It was just, they was just putting so darn much serum in them, and it just showed up on them. Mm-hmm. After we didn't have no trouble. After they just started testing the whole herds with them, putting just one little shot in them, and we never had no cows go down. At one time, when they first started, they didn't know what they was doing. They turned out of herds, whole herds down. You know, and you know, all of them didn't have it. And young calves didn't have it, you know that. They didn't. They turned them all down. They shipped them away in carloads.
Do you remember much about Gunpowder Neck, what it was like with Arsenal took over?
Well, it was nothing. It was just nothing but farms all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a dirt road all the way down, clear down. You could go clear down to the bay, down to the point, clear down to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the farms down there had as much as 400 acres in them.
Mm-hmm.
Bell Farm, Rouse Farm, and Raphael Farm. They all had 400 acres in them. And then the rest of them run a little less than that, all the way down. Some places was marsh down in there. The last place down the neck, you had to cross the marsh there. If it was high tide, sometimes it was water in the road.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to cross the road there to get over to that next farm, the last farm down on the point. And then right across that from there was Cool Down lays right in line with the end of the Gunpowder Neck.
Mm-hmm.
But Bush River Neck, I didn't know too much about Bush River Neck. My uncle lived down there one time. And I was down there once. He bought a place down there called Black Island. It was right down on the bay, on the eastern shore. Not on the eastern shore, but down the other side of Bush River. On the other side of Bush River Dam, that was Bush River Neck, I think he called it. This was Gunpowder, and that was Bush River Neck. But I didn't know too much about that, and that guy was down there one time. And you had to cross down along the bay, you had to cross a marsh there to get into where his farm was there. He was the last farm down, clear down there. And right across from there was Pasusi Island. It wasn't too far away from there. And we went over there, he took us over there on the boat, and we got some pawpaws over there. Did you ever see a pawpaw?
Mm-hmm.
They had some big pawpaw trees there. They grow like a banana, but they only grow about that long. And they don't grow in bunches.
Mm-hmm.
They grow separate on the tree. And it tastes almost exactly like a banana.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether them trees are still there on Pasusi Island or not, but there was there at that time. We got some pawpaws over there when we were over there at that time. That guy's out from there to have it with us.
Mm-hmm.
Pasusi Island didn't include some.
Was there a lot of opportunities for a young man around here with the way jobs were?
Well, not too much. I don't know, it seemed like if they didn't have a job, well, the family kept them, just young folks. used to hire a bunch of them. Sometimes when we was planting tomatoes, well, we'd have as many as 19 planting tomatoes out in one field. All the young folks. They got $1 a day. They was just happy as us with $1 a day. Everybody was satisfied. And the thing of it was, you didn't have no money. The other guy didn't have no money. There was no jealousy there. you didn't have no money, they didn't either. So.
Well, did you ever trade help around? Like?
Oh, yeah. We help out once in a while. If somebody gets in trouble, we'd help them out. Snuffy down here one time, and he broke his leg. We filled his silo for him, them excavating for him, and that kind of stuff. Work didn't mean nothing them days. People didn't mind working. People down in the village, most of the people in the village, you burnt the cross ties. The farmer would do. They'd get the old cross ties and saw them up. And then that's how they heat the houses with them. But them houses didn't take too much. Well, they wasn't put up too good, I guess. But them houses in Magnolia, they rented for $3 a month. And they cost $300 to put them up. Put the house up. They paid $3 a month rent. Well, you couldn't pay any more than that when he's only getting $30 a month. Good one. Hospital, nobody knows. Didn't seem to know anything about a hospital. I had a doctor down here, did you? And there's never another doctor like him. I could go down there at 3 o'clock in the morning. Our doc, okay, Ernie, I'll be up in a couple minutes. He'd come out at 3 o'clock in the morning, any time at all. He charged $1 at the house and 50 cents at the office. And he was one of the best doctors. I got that hand in a circle saw. Mm. And I cut that finger off there. Oh, and a half inch out of there is going out of that finger. And on this end of the finger, it was no socket. And it was no place to sew to. I cut that finger off. It was flopping around in the back of my hand. Mm-hmm. Just hanging by the skin, and that was cut, and this one was cut. And the end of that finger and the end of half that nail was cut off. And this finger was cut through there, and you can see the score where it comes through. Mm-hmm. There in that knuckle there. Mm-hmm. And it cut the end of that finger off and half that nail. And he says, whatever you do, don't get it wet. And every time I go down there, he had a splint underneath of it. He couldn't sew to it because it wasn't on the sew tube. Mm-hmm. And he put that splint up underneath there. And I went down there one night and I told him, I said, that thing's sobbing up my arm here. Maybe that nail's doing that. My fingers is all puffed up. No, it's still, man. He went and got a pair of tweezers and pulled the rest of the nail right out of the roots. I come home that night, I could sleep that night. Because that's what was doing it. And it healed up, and I never had no trouble with it since. And that finger ain't got no socket there, and that finger will bend there. That finger will bend there, and there ain't no socket there. Only a socket on one side. And this hand, I got a lawnmower. And I cut all them fingers off all the way across. They were just hanging. And it took me in John Hopkins Hospital. And they took a drill. And they drilled the end of them fingers and drilled them back in here and put wires in. And put wires in all them fingers. One of them had two wires in it. Right down through the bone. And they had me laying. One doctor says, can you lay on your stomach? I said, yeah. And one doctor says, yeah, and says, never seen anybody operate on anybody laying on the stomach. And I had my arm out like that, and they made that arm numb. I didn't feel nothing. I heard one of them say to the other one, said, now hold that drill straight, you're drilling through your bone. And then wires come clear back to here. Huh. And drilled right in the end of the fingers, all three of them fingers are drilled right straight through. And the only stiff finger I got out of it was that, it cut through that knuckle.
Mm-hmm.
Cut right through the knuckle, and that's the reason that one finger's stiff. But the rest of them, I didn't do much anything. I didn't do anything I wanted with them. But Davis cut clear off. Mm-hmm. And then that doctor, them doctors in there, I bet you they took 100 pictures of him. They said they never, I was 70, I believe I was 72 when I cut that hand. And they said they never seen anybody heal as quick as I did. In a week's time, he was about healed up. It hurt worse when they pulled the wires out than it did the other side. They had to take the wires out after one of them was sticking out the end of my finger. That bothered me for a while when it was in there. But it was no time he was all healed up. Now, I can use that hand for it, but that one finger's stiff. Ain't too much feeling in it. There's a little bit of feeling in it. Mm-hmm. I've been battered up enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the horses that you own and work for the fire department?
Well, we had some horses here come from Ford Park. Old man Wildenbaugh, he had one down there coming from the fire department, and one time he come up past the school there, and the school bell rang, and that horse took up that road as far as he could run. Used to the fire bell, you know. But I broke a lot of horses and colts. When I was a boy, I used to ride colts and break colts, and I broke, I don't know how many horses. Young colored horses to hook them up. I had it. When I was up home, when I was a kid, was raking hay there, and I had a cousin was living there. He lived home there with us. And he was 8-10 years older than I was, and he was supposed to rake the hay. Well, I was 9 years old, and he put me on a rake, and he let me take a rake down the hen house. And I hit a bag of fertilizer down there, and the horse started running and run away with me. Towed me off a rake and went around the can house and towed me off a rake, and one of the rake teeth hooked me in the back of the head there. And I got up like a kid and run after the horse. And got old Dr. Roth up there. The old doc says she went a half inch deeper. He said, well, I never knew it. The blood was running all down the neck. Mother was still living. And she died in 1903. She was sitting up in the yard, and you got Dr. Roth up there. That was when he first came around here. But I got hurt a couple of times. I never had too many. I had horses run away with me a couple of times, but I never got hurt with them. Well, I broke dozens of colts.
What about the grain barges on Bush River and Snow's Mill? The grain barges.
Oh, the grain barges. They used to come up. They come up in Bush River yard. I remember them loading. They used to load the wheat and stuff right down here in Bush River with the boat. One time, brother-in-law, he moved from here down to Black Island, and the boat come in there to get his stuff and to haul it down to Black Island. I went out there with a load of stuff. The boat in the water was about that deep. I had a mule in there, and he laid down in the water and started to roll. He got underneath the tongue out there in the water. But they used to ship grain from down there, right up in the upper part of Bush River. Ship grain in boats there. And down the neck there, they used to ship under all the grain out down there, down to Bell Farm, down that end of the river. Loads of barges coming there. Mm. And we used to ship some canned goods out down there in boats. We could ship a carload of canned goods from here to Newport News. We could ship it to Baltimore and reload it, load it on a boat, and ship to New Orleans cheaper than you could run it down the train. That's how cheap the boats are in them days. You could pay for reloading it and take it out of cars, put it on a boat, and send it down there cheaper than you could send it down the freight. Hmm. Yeah, they used to always rain here in Bush River all the time. And I thought you ship all the wheat out of the boat. And they shipped after we didn't can down there no more, they used to send it out of the tomatoes out of the boat, load them on the boat and send them down to Baltimore can. Mm-hmm. The boat. They could drive out in the water there for a ways. Water was about 3 foot. They could go into within water when it's only about 3 foot deep. Take the horses out there, right out in the water. Load them on the boat.
Well, you mentioned something about the arsenal. I was wondering about the heating and ice plant on the arsenal.
Oh yeah, I worked down there in the heating plants down there for 28 years. It was supposed to be operating engineers, they call them, were operating steam engines, steam blowers and stuff. I've done that for years. And I used to run the boiler when they had the can house there. I run that boiler for a long while when there was can down there yet. That's been years ago. We stopped down there in 26. 25, 26, that was the last year we came. I went down the arsenal, and I used to work down there. Worked down there and farmed their boat. Then the boys grew up, and the boys done the biggest part of the work here. And now I ain't done no farming for about the last 25, 30 years. The youngest son, he's been farming. Other son, he's got a farm over in Magnolia Yard. And they got two schools built on his farm now. The county took the farm over. And he kept 5 acres there in the barn and the house there. He had a new house put up there. And he lives over there on the Magnolia Road now. He still lives in the house, and they got two schools on the place there now. That middle school over there and in that elementary school, both men is on his place over there. Mm. I have one boy, 66. He's 66.
Well, what do you think of, how did Edgewood get developed? I mean, whose farm with like the Edgewood Meadows on and all the places like that?
Well, Edgewood Meadows over there, that's over on, you know where that's at, over there where the bank in there, right this side of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that there belonged to my sister. But she still lives there. She's got a big house that's, she's up Edgewood Road, she's got a big house that's back off the road there a good ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she keeps the pig on down, clear down to the road, and she keeps it on there, and she still kept the house and about 5 or 6 acres there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just built that farm up. And her husband died here in 1920. He's been dead 20 years. He died in 1960, January 1st, 1960. And she's living there ever since. And she'll be, if she lives till March, she'll be 92. She lives there by herself.
Was she the first one to sell the farm?
Do it.
Of all the Hansons, was she the first to sell the farm?
Yeah, she was one of the first ones to sell the farm out of the bunch. Now I got another sister. She's up in the nursing home in Blair. And she lives to February. She'll be 90. And I got a brother's 82, and I got another sister who's just turned 80. She's the youngest one. She's 80 years old. She's a baby.
Well, what do you think about Edgewood being developed as a more of a you know, housing area?
I don't know. I guess it's all right. Just built up, all built up in there now. There's nothing like it used to be. Ain't as nice around as it used to be. It's too many people around. Traffic on the roads and everything. Used to be, if you saw somebody coming up the road, you know it's coming in here. Now it's just a steady stream of traffic here.
Do you think if you had it all to do over again, would you still?
I don't know. I guess the ones that sold the farm are living easier than they did when they had the farm.
Very hard.
Yeah, they're living easier. They ain't got nothing. Time goes slower, but I know when you had the farm going, well, time went fast and day was gone before you knew it. Now it seems like days a week. You ain't got nothing to do. No cattle around. I liked it better when the cows was here. They was here up till about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. We had 40 head of cows here. Nothing open in there. And then the younger son, he took it over. He took it over about 20 years ago, and he's been farming it ever since. He had about 40 here, and got a couple of beef cattle here now. Two of them belongs to my other son. He's just feeding them here. The other son over there, he's got about 10 beef cattle over there. He's got to have something, you know, to keep. And he ain't got them to make money out of them, but he's got to keep money out. Mm-hmm. He's making all right on them. They're doing all right. They're paying their way.
Mm-hmm. So was this a very fertile area to have your farm?
Well, never too much settlement around here. Nobody, there wasn't much building on going around here then.
Was the land pretty good for farming?
Oh yeah, it's a good land for you. It's good tomato land and corn land. There's good farms here. There's Snappy's place down there. Right, good size. And then down at Fry's place down there, that had about 100 acres in it.
Hmm.
That's right down on the river. They don't farm no more either. The company bought that, and then after they bought it, they couldn't get the rights to build on it, and they never built it up. Them's the ones that's suffering. The land took a hell of a jump. I bought 25 acres over right this side of Joppa Town. Of course, Joppa Town wasn't in there then, back in 1940. I bought 25 acres and I paid $1,900 for them. $75 an acre. The son sold them 25 acres for $125,000. That just shows you where land's going to. I remember when you could buy all that land up along Red 40 up there in that woods for $2 an acre.
Well, do you remember Joppa, like where Rumsey Mansion is, that area, before they started developing it? What, the old town of Joppa was there at one time. Do you remember anything?
Well, there's a little village in there in Joppa yet, what they used to call Joppa. I don't know whether you know where it's at now or not, but there's a little village down there right next to the railroad, with Joppa Station was there. And then most all of them people worked on the railroad, on a B&O, see, that was a B&O railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them people worked on a railroad. But that was all, and there was no houses around there then. There was a few houses in there, but scattered here and there and there.
Mm-hmm.
And right up on the this side of there, between there and 152, there was a school there called Prospect Hill School.
Mm-hmm.
That was a two-room school there. And then there was no more school. It was a school manual and one in Joppa. And anybody who lived in between there, it was about halfway between there, they had to walk to one school or the other.
Mm-hmm.
We used to walk from up home down to Sedgwick School in the summertime, except in winter when the weather got bad, we drove a horse. But other than that, we walked to school. Mm. Didn't mind it. The kids didn't mind it.
I should ask you about getting a family doctor to pull your teeth.
That old doctor, oh, he pulled teeth for me, all right. The old family doctor. One time I was just a boy, about 16, I guess. Maybe 17, rolling there, and I got the teeth ache, my jaw was all swelled up. The old Dr. Roth up there, and he took him old forceps. They took it out. They didn't give you nothing. You didn't put nothing on your teeth. You just pulled your tooth. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
He could pull teeth or anything. Yeah, that was. Never was a doctor like him. He could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed all his own medicine. He could treat my pneumonia and all kind of stuff. He'd come in and he'd give you some medicine. He'd lay a little paper out. Take a little bit of powder of this and a little bit of powder of that and mix it up. That's the way. There was no pills, and most of it was mostly all powder to give you.
Mm.
And all the babies around with him. He brought all the young people around in the world. At the homes, they didn't have any. Didn't go to no hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he lost as many women as a hospital did, on average.
What about hunting duck with deck gun?
Down there on the marsh down there, my father used to gun down there a good bit. And with a little island down there, they called Snake Island. And it was 6 foot of water around that island at that time. And he used to duck down there, and they'd take live decoys. And they put them out on strings, and they had a band on them with a little ring in it, and they'd snap his ear on and put them decoys out like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a water dog. The first time they took him down there, when they shot the ducks, he went out and got the head decoy and brought all the decoys in. But the time he got to it, he'd sort them out. He'd get a crippled duck and he'd pick him up. I don't think he had any more trouble with him after that. But it got so down there, wasn't the water in there no more.
Was there some kind of a hunting club or something out there?
Yeah, they used to have down in that year, they used to have a hunting club. Down to Broadneck, Hayward and Bartlett owned that property in there. And they used to hunt down there all the time, Cedar Grove, Oak Grove, and Riverside, the three farms down in there. And it just followed the water around, all the way around Bush River there. And they used to hunt there, and then down the neck there, Kettwilder owned this whole neck down here, from the whole neck all the way down. And he lived down, he had a mansion down on down the island down there, Point goes out there. He had a mansion down there, and they lived in Philadelphia, and they used to come down. And that Hayward and Bartlett, they used to come out here and they'd gun down here. And then there was another gun club down there at the Philadelphia Clubhouse. Used to be a bunch come out there. And old man Brown lived down there. I know he had a shore down there. And he used to duck down there too. I never done much ducking. I used to like to rabbit hunt, but I never done much duck hunting.
Mm. How about filling your first silo?
Well, filling the silos, that used to be a headache too. When I first started filling silos, you cut the corn, load it on a wagon, then brought it in, then run it through a cutting box. And then put it up in the silo from the cutting box. And out of the woods, after years went by, we got the corn harvester in here. You cut the corn and you got a wagon following a chopper in the back. And then you just go on and cut the two rows at a time and go out in the wagon. Take it in there and turn the thing on and wind it out of the wagon. All mechanical, just dump it into the blower and blow it up in the silos. It made a whole lot of... At their job when he used to load on the wagons, that was a big job, loading it on the wagons and bringing it in and unloading it. Afterwards we got the chopper. And it cut two rows at a time. You put in a load about every half hour. Cut it out of the field and haul it in and put it in a thing about half an hour. Now when they pick corn, we used to husk corn by hand. You cut the corn and set it up in shocks. Then go out in the winter time and pull the shocks down, husk it out by hand. And then haul it in, shove it off a wagon. Now they go out there with the picker and pick two rows at a time and runs right in the wagon. And you come in and you get self-unloading wagons, you just open the gate and let it run into an elevator, and the elevator takes it right up the corn out. It makes a lot of difference. A lot of difference in farming now, but then the a little more expensive now. Gasoline around $1 a gallon. You don't track to burn about 20 gallons a day, easy.
Well, do you think, living in this area, how did you relate to Harford County in general? Like, did you get up to different areas in Harford County as it was developing, like around Bel Air?
We never done much of that up in there. Mm. Never done much in that place.
You sort of kept to yourself down here?
Most to yourself down here. Mm-hmm. And they kept to themselves up there, they didn't bother down here either. Mm. But if anybody was in trouble in the neighborhood, well, most everybody was off. Now, I guess he did up there too. You take up in Pennsylvania, the Maronites up there, they get ready to set up a barn over there, and every farm in the country comes in there and sets it up. Mm-hmm. But they wasn't that quite that friendly down this way.
Well, how much area did your father own with his farm?
Well, he had this farm, the farm up home, and the McComas place up there, and the Price property up there. There was about, out there, and McComas place up there, it had about 100 acres and had a can house on it, house. It was right on the railroad, and we had a sidetrack in there. Used to go to Kingwood there. And when they sold that McComas place, the whole farm and everything, they was, I don't know how long, it was about 2 years, getting $2,800 for it. Now, you can almost get that for an acre. Mm-hmm. Well, in them days, you could buy a farm, pretty nice farm, for about $4,000 to $5,000. House and barn and everything on it. First tractor, I think I paid $1,700 for a tractor back in '52. That same tractor now is about 9,000. Mm-hmm. A young guy that ain't got no backing, maybe he ain't got his father behind him or nothing, he can't hardly start the farm no more. Because to just get the machinery he needs, you could figure on $40,000 just for machinery. Mm-hmm. That ain't counting no cattle or nothing. A good sized tractor now is about $9,000. Well, you ain't got nothing but the tractor. You gotta have. You ain't got no plow. You ain't got no machinery. Nothing to hook to. And a man that hasn't got somebody behind him or got a lot of money, well, he just couldn't start no more. He couldn't start farming no more. Years ago, a guy started the farm and he bought an old plow somewhere for $4 or $5. And he could buy a pretty decent pair of horses for $300. And he could start farming. But not in that day. You can do that. Yeah, I've seen a lot of it with you. Seen a lot of them start and get out of it.
Well, now, when you were farming, did you split up your time between, like, tomatoes and corn and then the cows?
Well, we used to have, one year, sometimes, like, I had corn in the field this year, maybe next year we planted tomatoes. Oh. And maybe next year it would be in hay. Mm-hmm. And that's the way you just kept rotating most of them. Mm-hmm. But the pasture field, mostly just kept that study of pasture all the time. And if you didn't feed the pasture, we used to put fertilizer on the pasture once in a while and boom the pasture up and cat it. Then we hauled all the manure out in the field yet. Manure spreader. And then about around 30 years, I guess. Put a barn cleaner in down there. I used to have to fork all that manure. And there's the barn cleaner. There's an endless chain running in a trough behind the cows. And this barn cleaner would run going out and run in right in the manure spurt. And every morning all you had to do was go down and throw the switch and clean the whole barn. And you didn't get all over the floor and nothing else. Kept a barn floor clean. Old barn cleaner's still in here. The son's got one in over his place. He still uses it over there. He got some beef cattle running the barn over there, and he's still using his barn cleaner. Mm-hmm. He had a nice setup over there. The county wanted to buy it, so he sold it. County's got a little bit of land there yet, and he's got them cattle there, and he just run a fence down across there, and they keep up the ground from growing up. They let him pasture in there, and they keep the ground and keep it from growing up. It stays nice and green, and he gets the pasture out of it too. And then if it grows up too high, he's got a rotary mower, he goes out and cuts it off for him. They'd rather for him to do that and not do nothing with it. But they'd have to do it if, or else got to grow up one or the other. Mm-hmm. He's right. His place run right down behind Magnolia Village. He's about 4 or 5 houses in a row there, running right down to the fence. It's been over there since, he put a new barn up over there in 45. It holds about 37 cows. That's still there. He's still got the barn. And he planted some corn in part of that ground over there. Raising up corn to feed the cattle.